We're beginning here at the top of Mem Chemed Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is continuing the sugya that we left off with yesterday, which is whether Hazmana Milta here or not. Machlokas Utin and Bayin Rava as to whether when someone makes preparations or commitments to do certain things with items, does that automatically classify them as having been used for the mitzvah or dedicated to the mitzvah or not? So the Gemara says, Meitavei, we have a Mishnah in Kelim that says, Kippah Shehu Tameh. Kippah over here is a tzaif, some sort of a scarf or headband, that is tamei midras, that is tamei because it was used to sit on, an item that can be used to lay on or sit on, and therefore it can become a tuma of tumat midras, which is a higher form of tuma. Venatanato, the sefer. And then he rededicates or changes its use to be for a cover for a sefer Torah or any type of a book of Kedusha. Then it's tahor min midras. At this point, it loses its status of being tamei midras because it's no longer going to be an item that you're going to sit on. And in general, if we have items that are can become tamei or kelim that can become tamei, and we say amod v'nasei malachteinu, meaning that whatever their usage is or their primary usage is not for sitting on. For instance, if you had a kli that you normally put something in, and then you sit on the kli, that may not accept tamei midras, but would say, get up and let's do what normally is done with this kli. So over here, once it becomes a wrap or a cover for the sefer or the sefer Torah, at that point in time, it's no longer useful, it's no longer used for sitting on. So therefore, it loses its status of a tamei midras. On the other hand, aval tamei maga midras, or it's tamei tumat maga. Meaning that even though it loses its status of tamei tumat midras, it still now is a new kli. In a sense, he's created a new kli that he's going to use to cover the sefer Torah. But the kli itself touched the previous kli. The previous kli, which was used for sitting on, and therefore was tamei tumat midras. Now the new kli is not going to be used for sitting on, but nevertheless, it touched the original kli. Since you didn't destroy it, you didn't do anything that was a maaseh to remove the tumah, even though you've changed its usage or its function, by changing the function, yes, you've taken it away from having the ability to become tamei tumat midras. But nevertheless, it touched the original begin, in a sense, and therefore it still has a tamei tumat maga. It still has the tamei tumah of touching something that was maga midras. So over here, what we see from this is that even though he did not change the usage, I mean, functionally, he didn't use it yet to cover the Sefer Torah. Just the mere fact that he states that he's going to change it from being a tzaif or some sort of mitpachat that he would be willing to sit on to make it over to a cover for a Sefer Torah or cover for a Sfarim, that by definition already changes its status, the Gabei Tum'ah. So you see that, according to this, that Hazmana Milsahi. So Gemara says, no. Ema, let the Mishnah read, Nitanato Vikarachto. That it's not simply that he designated it, but he also actually did that. Functionally, he used it to wrap the Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, Lama Lini Nitanato Vikarachto. Then why does the Mishnah have to give you both verbs? The verb that he designated it, and also the verb that he actually wrapped it. Just say, if according to this, that Vidin Hazmana is Lav Milsahi, and you actually need to do something, b'ma'aseh, in actuality, to make it into the new Begit, then just say Karachto. What's the addition of an Etanato do for you over here? Where it says, Kid Rav Chisto. That's like Rav Chisto, who we saw before. Amar Rav Chisto, I sujud the Azmaneh, the Meitzabar Tefillin. The Tzarbeit Tefillin, this Tefillin bag or handkerchief that he's going to wrap the Tefillin in, if he designated, he said ahead of time that he's going to use it for Tefillin, and he actually puts the Tefillin in it, Asur the Meitzer Beit Pshite. Then he's Asur from placing in it money anymore, because now this bag is designated to be a Tefillin bag, and you can't use it for Tashmishei Chol, you can't use it for mundane usage or functions, because it's now designated for Tefillin. On the other hand, Hazamnei Velo Tzarbeit, if he designated it to be a Tefillin bag, but he never actually put Tefillin in it, or the other way, in Tzarbeit, he actually put Tefillin in it, Velo Hazamnei, but he never stated that it's going to be a Tefillin bag, we assume here again that it's going to be just a temporary item, he's just using it for now, because he didn't specifically state that he's going to use it. In both of those instances, sure, the Meitzer Beit Pshita, he's allowed to use it for money, because it does not, Toface the Kedusha, it does not become designated or uniquely used, usable for tefillin. So you see, from Chista, you need both things. You need both the idea that you have to prepare it, azamnei, that you have to designate it, and number two, you need that tashmish, you actually have to use it. So both of them are required, and that's what this Mishnah is teaching us. Nitanato Vikarachto is not only that he designated the handkerchief to be used again for a mitpachat of the Sefer Torah, but in addition that he actually used it. So both of those items together are what makes something kadosh. Because we assume, if you didn't prepare it, and you simply use it, we assume that's a temporary usage, since you didn't state that you want to use it for this on a permanent basis. On the other hand, If you simply state you're going to use it, and you haven't used it yet, then Hazmana la milsi, and that won't be enough to get you to the level of Kedusha. Tosfos points out over here that not to know the Sefer, it's not simply enough to say that I'm going to do this. Tzarech lomar, the yichud adibur ba'amal lomahani, that just simply stating that I'm going to change the usage of this handkerchief to be used now for a cover of the Sefer Torah, that's not enough. Elam kenat lo. You have to actually pick it up. Varmar zeh yelamet ul the Sefer. That you have to specifically, you have to do some sort of action with your hand. You have to do some sort of maaseh, besides not the usage maaseh that's demanded here, but the maaseh that you hold it in your hand, you pick it up to show that you're changing its status. You can't just say words out in the open. You have to hold it or give it some sort of the words on what techal, that maaseh is you have to pick up the handkerchief and do that. Right now, the Gemara continues. Ulebaye damar hazmana miltihi azamne afagav to lo tsarbe I azamne in ilo azamne lo. According to Abaye, who argues now on Rav Chista, and Abaye we know before, he says that hazmana is a miltihi. So therefore, azamne, if he prepared it, he designated it to be used for tefillin, even afagav to lo tsarbe, even though he didn't use it. But tsarbe, when it comes to tsarbe, when he actually used the tefillin, I azamne in, if he designated it, then it works. Ilo azamne lo, again, because we'll say like by Rav Chista, that means that he only wanted to use it for a temporary basis, so he's not really intending to use it as a tefillin bag, he just needed it for the moment. And if that's the case, it doesn't take on the status of a tashmishei kedusha or tashmishei mitzvah, and therefore it will not be a problem to use it for mundane matters afterwards. Tashma, nefesh shibana ol shem chai mutar ba'ana. Somebody makes some sort of tombstone or monument to an individual who is alive still. Sounds like maybe even put up a tombstone for himself. He may mark the grave for himself, but while he's still alive, then it's mutar ba'ana. Hosipa dimus echad l'shem meit. After the meit dies, they add on an additional row of bricks or some addition to the building. Asur ba'ana. Then it becomes asur ba'ana. With this, what's the question from here? Question from here is that by designated, we said before, that designation, according to Abaye, is enough, and according to Rava, it's not enough. So over here, a person builds something that is for the mace. Well, if they build it while they're still alive, then it wasn't built for the mace. So therefore, it won't have a status of Isur Anah. On the other hand, over here, when he builds it or adds an additional row for the mace, automatically becomes asur b'hana. Sounds like from here that simply preparing the grave or the tombstone or the catacomb in which they're going to be buried, if you make an addition after the mace is dead, that's enough to be created to make it asur, even though the mace has not been entered or placed in there. So that sounds like Peshitta's Abaye. So Mary answers up on behalf of Rav Avachamai Eskinon, the Rama Bay mace, that the mace is actually placed in there. It says, Yachim Ayiria, Hosif, Kilo Hosif Namilo. Right, so why would you say that the mace, if they say the mace has been put in there, why do you have to have it that the building has an addition made to it in order for it to become asur b'ana? I mean, if you put the mace in there, then it's clearly asur b'ana because now you've used it for the mace. Right, before we were just talking about whether you prepared it for the mace or didn't prepare it for the mace. Whether then the mace doesn't go in there, then there's a question. But over here, you're going to actually put the mace in there. Why do we care? Why do we even matter whether he adds on the brick row or not brick row? It's now asur b'ana. The mace tzricha. Avagav defanya. Even though he removed it, I mean that even if he added a row of bricks and then later removes them and places the mate in there, it's still asur behana'a. Tricha afgo defanya, even though you remove the mace from that area or that burial spot. So even though if you later remove the mace from that burial spot, it still keeps the level of tuma. That's only true if you add it to the binyan for the shema mace. But if you didn't add it to the binyan for the shema mace, if you place them in there, it'll be like what we said before with the tefillin bag. That when you just use something temporarily, we don't assume that it takes on a status of kedusha. So if he puts the mace in there temporarily and then takes it out, we don't say that it's tofes, so that it's asur b'ana. On the other hand, if he builds something specifically for the mace and then places the mace in there, then it causes this isur anah, because then you have both hazmana and an action that gives it a isur anah. Amar Rav Rafam Parvam Rav Chiste Maya Makiro Chotso Umutar. If he knows which row of bricks it is that he added, then he can remove that row of bricks, and that'll be mutar. And if the whole thing that is making it asur here is the additional row of bricks, because he did something to the kever while he was a mace, and then took the mace out, if he can remove that row of bricks as well, then he can be mutar everything b'hana, because it's only the additional building that makes it asur b'hana. We don't know which row of bricks it is, we don't know what it is, and the whole building becomes asur b'hana. And then if we do, if we can identify which set of bricks it is, then we can take them away, and it will no longer be asur b'hana. Someone who digs a grave for his father, or quarries a grave for his father, then he chooses to place him in a different kever. He can't be buried there forever. So now, what's the Gemara's question over here? Gemara's question over here is, if by preparing the grave, it's enough to designate it as being a grave for the mate, and therefore that the person himself can't use it for any alternate or ulterior usage, that indicates, again, that hazmana milsehi. Gemara says, no. You're not understanding over here. It's hatam mishum kvod aviv. The reason that you can't be buried in this location is not because it's asur banah. It's not because that you plan to use it for the mace, but rather because it was used for your father, designated for your father. So that would be a violation of kibud av ha'eim for you to be buried then. Not a problem of hazmana milsa, not a problem of isur banah, rather a problem simply of kibud av ha'eim. The Gemara says, achanami mistaba, it makes sense, l'ktoni sefer, because if we look at the next part of the Braisa, it makes sense that that's the case, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, afa chutzev avanim, aviv, someone who quarries stones to be used for his father, and then he goes and buries him somewhere else, he can't use those stones. If it's because of kibud av ha'eim, that makes sense. If you say that it's because of hazmana milsehi, like Abaye, and that's what the problem is over here, tovi le'ariga mi'ika demandu amar. When we talk about hazmana milsa, that's only when you're at the last point of process that brings you to the making the object functional or usable. Here, where he's quarrying stones in order to bring them over and then to bury his father and place the stones on top, that's too far removed from the fact that he's going to be buried there. So that nobody ever says that hazmana milsa is when you're steps removed from the final part of that process. Again, if you dig the actual grave or you quarry the catacomb out, that point in time, now it's ready to be used. So that you can say hazmana milsa here. But here we're talking about stones that he's going to bring over and later build something for his father, or put together some sort of binyan for his father. It's already two steps removed. Then we don't classify it as hazmana milsa here. And therefore it makes sense that the problem in this mission, this braisa, is a problem of kibud av ha'eim. Because even with two steps removed, we say you can't use them because of kibud av ha'eim, not because of hazmana milsi. It says, Tashma, kever chadash mutar behana'a. A brand new kever that was dug out, again, not designated for any mace, then it's mutar to be used. Hitil bo nefil asur banah. If you place in a miscarried child, a fetus, into there, then it becomes asur banah. Hitil in lo yitil lo. Only if you placed it in is it a problem. But if you don't place it in, it sounds like it's not a problem. Where it says, uadin afagav to lo yitil, even if you didn't place it in, but you thought about placing the nefil in, going to buy, that would be sufficient. Why does this Braisa suggests that it has to be only hitil actually put it in, because afuke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, this is to come to exclude from the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, damar in lefilim tfisat hakever, who says that nefilim do not have a ability, or they do not get the same rights as another mace, which is that they are to face the kever to make it asur banah, to be locked into the location so you can't remove them from there anymore. So that only happens by a mace that had reached full gestation, but those nefilim do not have that. So along comes this braisa to say no, that nefil hitil bo nefil. In that case, you are to face by the kever, even though Reb Shimon disagrees in that case. So, Kamash Balan, that's the case that we think that the aloha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel, that a nefil is to face the kever. Tashma, mutara meitim, the meitim, mutara meit, li your shop. There's nothing about collecting tzedakah. They collected tzedakah for meitim in general to take care of the chevra kedisha collected money. Now, the mutar meitim, if there was leftover money, they didn't need it, they have to use it for the meitim themselves. Motar mate, what happens if they're specifically designated, they're collecting for a specific mace, and then there's additional monies left over, the Yorshav, that goes to his inheritors. So again, over here, it sounds like they gathered money, and it was designated for a specific usage, and even though it was designated for a specific usage, we allow you to give it to the Yorshim afterwards. So if that's the case, sounds like Hadzmana Lav Milsahi. But Tani Allah, we explained in this braisa, Ketzad Gavu, Ketzad, as it were, Gavu Lameitim Stam, if they collected for Meitim in general, Zehu Motar Meitim Lameitim. Then the additional money, the extra monies have to go to the Meitim. Gavu Lameit Zeh, if they collect the money for a specific mate, Zehu Motar Meit Liyoshav, that's what it means that it goes to his inheritors. So Gemara says, Lutameich, according to your reasoning over here at that, it looks like Hazman Allah Milsi, Rabbi Meir Meir, Lo Yigabahen Achivo Eliru, you can't touch them until Yahu comes. Rabbi Natan Omer, you said, Dimus al kivro, oziluf lifnei mitato, that you have to make an extra row on top of the binyan or the nefesh, the monument that's placed around the grave. Oziluf lifnei mitato, you sprinkle wine, you do something that's kavod ameis. So now you have two opinions that sound like it is a zman milsahi. So you can't prove anything from this brisa. Ella abayin mitaritz l'tamei, rav mitaritz l'tamei. Both abayin rav can explain this brisa each according to their own shita. Abayin mitaritz l'tamei, rabbi's shita, which is kuli alma hazman milsahi. Everybody agrees hazman milsahi. Tanakama sever dechazilei tofis. Only that which was useful for him or needed for him is what's tofes the kedusha. But tofes the shema mason becomes also or not. The lo chazilei lo tofis. That which is not ra'oi for him, meaning that it's in addition or extraneous monies. Additional monies that they did not need, that's never tofush be kedusha. Rav Meir smis fekele. He is a safek whether it's tofes with the being an isur ana being kadosh to be used for the meitim. Itavis lo tofes. That's his safek. Hilchach lo yigabe and achivoy lo. Therefore, he has to leave them in limbo until Yahu comes and clarifies the situation for you. Rav Natan pshitele devadai tofes. Rav Natan says no. Doesn't matter how much money you collect, even if it's in excess of the amount that you need, it's still tofes the isur ana and it's being designated for the meit. Therefore, hilchach yaseh dimus al kivro. Therefore, he has to do something specifically for the mace. The Rava mitaritz the tamei. Rava believes according to his reason, which is the kuli amo hazmana lav milsi. Everybody holds that hazmana as makes no difference over here. Ah, so then why the Tanakh Kama Sarvi ki bazulei achuli machil izulutei? So over here, this person's going to be embarrassed. They're going to go out and collect in his name, and therefore he is, in some senses, degraded by the fact that they have to go out in his name and collect specifically for him. Therefore, but when it comes to his yorshim or those that are going to inherit him. He's mochel on his kavod, he's mochel on his bizayon when it comes to his biyoshim benefiting from the money. So they used his name, they went out with his name to collect the money, so that's embarrassing, we should use all the money for him. But there are certain people who are close enough to the individual, like his yorshim, where he would say, even if I'm embarrassed, or even if it caused me to embarrass to collect the money, I'm okay with that as long as my yorshim end up with the money. Either I, or use it for me, or use it for the yorshim, and therefore we say it's machul the gabeya yorshim. Rabbi Meir is a safek. Rabbi Meir is a safek. Whether a person in this instance is mochel on his kavod, on his bizayon, to allow his relatives to collect the money. So therefore you have to wait until Yahu comes to clarify the situation. Rabbi Natan, it's clear to him that that person is not mochel on his kavod or his bizayon. And therefore you must, you have to do something specifically for the meith. So over here, Rav was saying that Arm Brace is not really discussing the issue of Azmana Milsi. It's not about Azmana Milsi, it's about all about Mechilat Bizayon. There's a Bizayon in collecting for the particular mace, and therefore the question is, is he Mochel on that Bizayon when it comes to benefiting relatives? Only when it comes to his own benefit, and that's Machel, because Rabbi Natan believes it's for his own benefit only, he's Mochel. The Tanakam believes even for his Yoshim, and Ramir has a Safek, and therefore he leaves it until the time of Eliyahu. Tashma. Hayu imuv im aviv imo mizarkin bo kelim. His mother and father were distraught over the death of their child. They were throwing their clothing, they were throwing all their possessions onto the mita, onto the bed of their son that they had lost, chas v'shalom. And the Mishnah Brisa continues and says, mitzvah ala chevim latzilen. It's mitzvah on others to take away those clothes and not allow them to become a surban, not allow them to become buried, because they are throwing away good money, and that doesn't make any sense. It's okay to be distraught. Maybe this distraught doesn't make so much sense. But what do you see from here? Again, you see from here that Azmana lav milsahi. Here they're throwing it onto the kever, and nevertheless, or onto the mitah of the mace, and nevertheless, even though they designated or they wanted it to become Asur Ba'anah, nevertheless, it does not become Asur Ba'anah because it wasn't actually placed right into the kever. So Gemara said, Mishum Mirayu. The reason that they're throwing it is because they're so bitter. They're so upset, they're so bitter, they're doing something that's irrational. They're being emotional and irrational in this instance, and therefore we say that their das isn't really to oser it, or to make it into oser ano. They're doing it at the moment, but later on when they come to the senses, they're not going to want to do this. Therefore we do on their behalf, to act on their behalf, to take the clothing away and to make sure that it does not become asur behana'ah. But not that there's that Azmana lav milsahi, not that Azmana doesn't work. Azmana would work. But in this case, we have a umdana dadas, that this is not what they really want in the long run. Iachi, if that's the case, hanu duktani, Allah, then this is what it said on it. Amara vishimon gamleo bamed, varimamurim shalom nagum mita. As long as the clothes didn't touch the coffin or the bed that he's been carried on of, nagum mita surim. So then, if they touch the mita, then they are asur. So tagamaulo be mita nigveritimo. The mechalfei b'tachrichei ameish. Now the issue over here is what type of bed is he on? If he's on the bed that they're going to bury him in, and they're going to bury the bed as well, if the clothing then falls on him or on the bed, you do not allow them to take it away from there, because it could get mixed up with tachrichim. People might think, just like we take this clothing off, we can also take the tachrichim and mace off, or it can be benefit than tachrichim and mace. So along comes the chamim and saying, but it goes there. No, there's an isser anol in this case, even though technically you could take it back, because it looks like tachrichim. On the other hand, if they throw it onto the bed that he died on, but not the one he's going to be buried on, then for sure there they can save the clothing, because there it's clear that it won't get mixed up with tachrichim. Again, here, it's not an issue of Azmana Milsa here or not, because their actions are irrational and emotional. And therefore, we're not talking about Azmana Milsa or Lav Milsa here. All we're discussing here is whether their action to throw the clothing onto the bed makes it Asura. It doesn't make it Asura. If, again, it's the bed that they're going to bury him in, then it becomes Asura, but Midrabanan. It's Gzera Dirabanan to prevent people from getting mixed up between this and Tachrichim. If they throw it on the bed that's not going to be buried with him, that's not going to get mixed up with Tachrichim, and they're there, we ask other individuals to intercede on their behalf and take the clothing back. Tashma, Kisha asol aniach bo tefillin, he made some sort of bag to put in tefillin. Asol aniach bo ma'ot, you can't place monies into it. Aniach bo tefillin, yaniach bo ma'ot. You simply placed tefillin in there, but never made a statement of azmana that's designating it, then you can place monies into it. So now again, you see Kisa Shasol and Yechbo Tefillin here. It's just as Mana Milsa. He prepared a bag in order to use it to avoid Tefillin, and yet he hasn't used it yet. And nevertheless, we say that it's Asur Banat. Sounds like a bite. It's a question on Rabbah. So Rabbah will answer, Ema Sov and Yechbo Tefillin Asur and Yechbo Ma'ot. Now you have to amend this braisa to read that it's Kisa Shasol and Yech, and Yvain Yechbo Tefillin. He actually put the Tefillin in there. So he had both of those actions. Where it says, why would you need that? Because Kid Rav Chista, like we saw earlier about Rav Chista, that it's not enough to simply say something. It's also not enough just to place it in. You need to place it in with the hazmana, with an idea that you prepared or you're designated for being a tefillin bag. And only then does it become a sort to use for mundane matters. Tashma, Amar Luma, Naseli Tik Shel Sefer, Natik Shel Tefillin. Says to Unamai, make for me some sort of cover for the Sefer Torah, or a bag for my tefillin. Actually, Nishtamish Ben Kodesh, Mutar Nishtamish Ben Chol. Till you use them for something that's Kodesh, I mean, you place the Sefer Torah in it, you place the tefillin in it, then you can still use it for Chol, because I mean, you haven't used it yet. On the other hand, Nishtamish Ben Kodesh, Asur Nishtamish Ben Chol. On the other hand, if you used it for Kodesh, you already placed the tefillin in there, or you already used it for the Sefer Torah, then it becomes Chol. Then you can't, I'm sorry, it's usur to use it for dvarim that are chol, dvarim that are mundane. So over here, it sounds to support the position of Rabba, that azman alav milsa, until you actually place the tefillin in there, it's not enough. So what's Abayi going to do with this? The Gemara says, it turns out that the machlokas Abayi and Rabba is actually a machlokas Tanaim, and therefore we can explain all these braitot, we don't have to do what we did before, we can explain them based on these different Tanaim. Each braitot can be authored by a different Tano, and they don't necessarily agree, meaning that Abayi will agree to the Tano who holds like his position, and Rabba agrees to the Tano who holds like his position. What is this machlokas Tanaim? Where do we see that? The Tanaim, yeah, we have a braitot dealing with tefillin, tzipan zahav, he coats the tefillin, he covers the tefillin with gold, oshet la alehen or shobe, or wraps them up with a non-kosher animal, the skin of a non-kosher animal, psugot, over there they're pasul. Because we have a alocha lemilshem misinai, that they have to be covered with a behema tehora. So now, or behema torah kisherot, if he uses a kosher animal skin in order to cover them up, that's a kosher bayit. Even if he didn't necessarily do the whole process intending to use them for tefillin, for instance, he did not tan these skins in order to use them for tefillin. Nevertheless, it's still good as a tefillin bag, and you can use it for tefillin. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af or Behemat Torah Psulot Ad Shi Avdu Lishman. Shimon Gamliel says, no way, you have to do it Lishma. If you don't do it Lishma, you cannot use it for Bate Tefillin. So you must then do the tanning and the whole process of preparing of the skins in order to use them for the tefillin. You have to go up, must have a lishma throughout their process. Now, how does this connect to our Gemara over here? This is a different usage of the term azmana milsahi, and that actually turns out here to be a machlokas Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam with regards to how to explain how this connects to our previous Gemara. We had a machlokas between Abai and Rava about azmana milsahi or lav milsahi. That's what we're talking about when someone designates or prepares something to be used for a mitzvah. In that instance, we question whether that's enough to make it asur or asur to be used for any other purpose or not. And that's what Gajra Mazmana Milsa here. Over here, we're talking about doing a mitzvah, and whether you have to do the mitzvah lishma, or you don't have to do the mitzvah lishma. So according, what does that have to do with Azmana Milsa here or not? So Rashi claims over here that according to the one that Shalo Yibdo, that even though you did not me'abe, you didn't do things lishma, he must believe, like the Tanakam, that Azman Olav Milsihi, and therefore we don't worry about it. Meaning that if you think that preparations have no bearing on the item, then we're also not going to demand you in the preparation process that it be lishma. Because if it's not meaningful when you designate it, it's also not going to be meaningful when you do it lishma. So it's not necessary to have lishma, it's also not necessary to prepare it ahead of time. So it actually says, so Abaye's, Rava's position that Azman Olav Milsihi will work according to the Tanakamo here, who says you do not have to do something lishma. Now Rav Shimon Gamliel says you must do it lishma. You do it lishma, that's like Rava. Rava will hold like that, because Rava believes, like Abaye, because Abaye believes Azman Olav Milsihi, just like he believes that Azman has some bearing. Also over here, when you do it lishma earlier on, it will have bearing. Rabbeinu Tam questions this position of Rashi, because he says, we paskin Azman Olav Lam Milsihi like Ravel, but we also paskin that you have to do even lishma like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And the way Rashi is explaining the Gemara, those two positions would be inconsistent, because one believes that Zmana Milsa, which would require Zmana Lav Milsihi like Ravel, but that means you also don't need lishma. So how can we paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel in that case? So the Rabbeinu Tam says, no, you don't understand. If you believe that Zmana Milsihi, then you don't need it to be lishma. It's the other way around. Now then, if you don't require Zmana Milsa, then you do require it to be lishma. Why? Because it's not enough with hazmana. According to Abaye, if you do hazmana, that's enough to designate the item to create it to be the Shem Mitzvah. That'll be sufficient, so therefore it doesn't require lishma. On the other hand, Ravu believes that hazmana lav milsi, hazmana has no effect or bearing on the item. Therefore, you need something stronger, you need something else to make it designated for the mitzvah. So that's where you need the lishma part, to make it so that it is designated for the mitzvah. So Abaye has hazmana milsa, and that's how he prepares or gets the item ready for the mitzvah. And then Rava doesn't have hazmana milsa, so therefore he has to use the concept of lishma to bring it here. That way you can have the consistency, or you can reconcile between the two opinions that Rava holds. We pass on like Rava, who holds hazmana lav milsa, but we also, because of that, pass on like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who requires it to be lishma. Because if hazmana is lav milsa, then you need something else, and that's what else is the lishma aspect. So that's now will be, we see the machlokas between Abaye and Rava will be similar to this machlokas Tanaim, machlokas Rashi and Tosfot, who lines up with whom. Amalei Ravina Rava mi'ika duchto derami be'meis, v'argei bega the mace. So Ravina says to Rava, listen, I don't understand why you and Abaye are arguing over here, because your case is not even a practical situation. It's all, this question is all esoteric, because the case is never going to happen. When do you ever have a case where someone dies, and then only then do they start making the tachrichim? We saw before in Rashi, that Rashi says that the only time it comes to Asur B'anah is if you do it the Shema Mace, when the Mace is already dead. But when, before he's dead, and it doesn't work. We saw in the Braisa today, that if he's Chai, it has no impact on him when you do it designated for him. So that's to be done after the Mace. Whoever makes tachrichim, who makes the Mace sit around while you make tachrichim, or you get the Begadim, that's just never practical in a case. There is a case like that's going to Shachvei the Harfanaya, that those that passed away, the poor people that passed away, Harfanaya, they were so poor that they didn't prepare, they didn't have the ability to have their Aron or Tachrichim prepared ahead of time, and therefore they only done afterwards. So here we have a case where the mace is lying around, and you're going to do something, you're going to prepare something for the mace, and then if you change your mind, that'll be a machlok, din and bayin rubble, whether it's already designated for this mace or not. Dorish Memreimar, Yochasukavasi de Abaye. Memreimar says the Lachas like Abaye, that's Hazman and Milsi. Rabbanon, Samre, Yochasukavasi de Rabba. Rabbanon, Paskin like Rava, that is Mana, Lav Milsi, but Yochasukavati de Rabba. And that's the Gemara says, the Lachas like Rava, that is Mana, Lav Milsi. Now, Tan Rabbanon on Nisugio. Haruge Malchus, those that are put to death by Jewish kings, Nichseim the Melech, their possessions go to the king. Haruge based in that, those that are executed by based in Nichseim the Yoshim go to their inheritors, their possessions go to their inheritors. Even those that are put to death by the government, by the king, they also, their possessions go to their inheritors and do not go to the king. Doesn't it already say Melachim here, where Nabot HaKameli is put to death, Izebel has him put to death in order to get his vineyard for the benefit of her husband, the king. So it says, Hinei Kerem Nevot Asher Yirad Sham Lirishto. Right, they said that the Kerem Nevot now is available for you to inherit. So Amar Lahen Ben Achei Aviv Haya Ravi Yosho. Turns out he was his first cousin. So Achav was his first cousin. Achav was Nevot's first cousin. Therefore, he was the one who was supposed to inherit him. So that's why he inherited it over here. Not necessarily because, according to the Chachamim, that when you kill, when the king puts someone to death, he gets all of his possessions. Therefore, Achav was entitled to Karmel Navot now because he was put to death by the king. He was married by Machut. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda comes back and says, no, you're reading that wrong. But that over here, the Achav and Navot are actually related. So when Achav inherits him, it's because he's inheriting him as a relative, not because he was put to death by Machut. Where it says, wait a minute, that doesn't make so much sense. Alo, harbe banim ayulo. Didn't Navot have many children? Although that's not explicit in the Ketuv, and Rashi says, I don't know where they got that from. But the Gemara's assumption is that he had children. If he had children, then why would we allow the king, who is his first cousin, to inherit in front of the children? So Alo, otovet banav harag. That Ezevel had not only Navot put to death, but even his children put to death. Shneimar Mloet Demei Navot veDemei Banav Reiti. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes through the Navi to speak to Achav, and Ezevel tells them that I see the blood of Navot, but blood in the pearl, and Demei Banav, the blood of his children. So blood of him and his children sounds like it's they killed not only him but also his children. So Rabbanon, how bani maruim let save me menu. No. Demei banav is not literally the children that are already alive now, but future children. By killing him now, you cut off his ability to reproduce, and therefore you killed also any future generations that would have been issued from him from this point forward. So not that he killed his children that were already alive, but rather those in the future. Similar to what we have, the Medrash says by Kain Ve'evil, where it says, Demei achicha to akim elai, Hashem says that Demei achicha is Demei, the blood of your brother, and all of those future generations that are going to come out of him. That Cain, when you killed Hevel, you didn't just kill Hevel, you killed Hevel and anybody else, that all the future that could have come out of him. Somewhere again, also, by the Medrash by Moshe, who kills the Mitzri, says, Vayifen Ko Vacho, that he looked both ways to see if there was anybody coming out of him, anybody worthwhile coming out of the Mitzri. So that, because if he kills him, it's not simply enough that you look at this individual, see where they were, but you have to also look into the future, what they could produce. And that cutting them off or killing them is not only killing of the individual themselves, but you're killing any future that could have come out of this individual. So when it says, Bishlam adaman demar nechsem lemelech, according to the Chachamim, who say that the property goes to the king, Anu dichtiv, that's why when they brought the case, Ezevel trumps up the charges against them, and he says, Baruch Navot Elokim Umelech. The Navot not only blasphemed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he also did it to the king. Now he's a Morid Malchus. Why do I need the king to be out on it? It's enough that he blasphemed Hashem. That should be enough to make him lose his, or not lose his possessions, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you never lose your possessions, it always goes to your Hashem. So why is the additional word of melech in the puzzle? Why do you need this additional charge of melech, according to Rabbi Yehuda? It says, Ulu Tameich, Rabbi Yehuda says back to Chamim, wait a minute. Even according to you, right, Elohim Lomali. Why do I need him to have to curse the Kadosh Baruch Hu as well, Chas v'Shalom? Because the fact that he did that to Elohim is no bearing over here. All you care about is the Morid B'Malchus. It's been enough he just said it about the king. So why do we also have the word Elohim here? Elohim, what? Elohim, what's the reason that they did this? To make the judges much more angry and wanting to to execute this individual. It shouldn't look like the charges were just trumped up to benefit the king, but rather this person acted in such an egregious manner that they're going to be angry and they're going to want to put him to death. So Rabbi Yisrael, I can answer the same way, that it was just to make him more angry. The king is necessary over here, because it doesn't matter if it's a king or a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kadosh Shalom, because either way, it's going to end up with the Yoshim. But it does make a difference. They just added words or added crimes here, or Averot, in order to make it that it's much worse. So Mar says, Bishlam, the one who says that if someone is put to death by the king, then the possessions go to the king. That Yoav, after he violates the instructions of Shlomo, runs to the Mizbeach to hold on to the Mizbeach. Uchtiv ayomer lo kipo amut, says I'm not moving here, I'm going to die on the Mizbeach. Why exactly he wants to die on the Mizbeach and why he thinks the Mizbeach is going to protect him is actually Gemara in the Makot. Tosfos tries to actually reconcile that with our Gemara over here, we're going to see in a second. So Elamanda Amar Nechseam Liyorshim Maynaf Glamine, what does he care if he's killed by the Malchus, if he's killed by Beis Din? If he's killed by Beis Din, is Yerushim get it, according to Rabbi Yehuda? And if he's killed by the Malchus, is Yerushim also get it, according to Rabbi Yehuda? So why does it matter that he's hanging on to the Mizbeach to save himself? According to one who says that it goes to the Malchus, he stayed on the Mizbeach because he wanted to be killed by Beis Din, and not by being murdered by Malchus. So being killed by Beis Din, then his children would inherit him, as opposed to if he has the Malchut, if it's killed by the king, then his children would not inherit it, would go to the king. Then it makes sense why Yoav is hanging on there and doesn't want to leave. L'chayishah? No. There is a nafkamina, even according to the one who says that it doesn't go to his Yorshim, it goes to his Yorshim no matter what, is how long can he live? He was stalling. He was stalling. If he left there, he was going to go out, they're going to execute him right away for being more of a Malchus. So rather, he hung on to there, so they had to get the basin, they had to do work, they had a conversation with Shlomo Melech, and then he's delaying, it's a delaying tactic, so he doesn't get put to death right away. So Yoshev Benayo, it's a Melech Davar Lemor, Koti Ber Yoav, V'cholan Anoni. So Benayo goes back to the king Shlomo and says, this is what Yoav's response was to me with regards to what you sent me to tell him. Tell him that he has to, that he's more of a Malchut and he's going to have to be put to death. He comes back to Shlomo. This is what Amalei, this is what Yoav says to Benayo, or that they said intending for Shlomo. Zilma Amalei, tell Shlomo, Tarte lo ta'avid b'hai gavri, you can't do two things to me. Either, if you kill me, kabulu tete delachi avuch, then take on the curse that your father cursed me. Yoav, after he killed Avner Ben-Er, Kodesh Baruch Hu cursed him, that from his family they would never not be. And we're going to actually look at this pasuk in a couple of minutes, that they would not be missing a mitzorah, a machzik bepelach, or a nofel becheriv, or choser lechem. So all these four descriptions, David cursed Yoav with them. So God says, listen, if you want to kill me, fine, but then you have to accept the curse of your father. Right? If not, leave me alone, and let the curse of your father take care of me. You don't have to kill me. You can't do both. So the Melech says, do as he asked, kill him on the spot. So it sounds from here, it implies from here, that Shlomo accepted on himself the curses that his father had given to Yoav. And soon enough, that's what happens. That which David cursed Yoav with, in the end, happened to end up happening to his own children, his own descendants. Why? So all of these items, Zav mi Rechavam. Who was a Zav? Rechavam was a Zav, son of Shlomo. He jumped on, he rushes to get on his chariot to run back to Yerushalayim. So what does it mean, his chariot? It says, v'chol merkava sheyikav alav azav yitma. So I'm saying that the merkava here is representative of him having the choli of Zav. So Rechavam was a Zav, so that was one of the first things of the items that was cursed, that David cursed Yoav with. And the next item is Mitzorah. Miziyahu. That's Uziyahu, a Melech who becomes a Mitzorah. When he became very strong and he consolidated the empire, and Uziyahu was basically the height of the Jewish kingdom now. But then he became haughty. He decides to do something that was inappropriate and violate the word of the Kedushat Hashem. He wants to be the Kohen Gadol to bring Ketoret on the Mizbeach. And the Kohanim tell him, don't. He does it anyway. As he's reaching out to do it, immediately he bursts out in Tzorat, and they rush him out of the Mikdash. So over here, that's a Zera of David that got to be a Mitzorah. Machzik bepelach, someone has to hold a cane, has to walk with difficulty. We learn from Asa, Dichtiv, Radle, Ziknato, Chalat, Raglav. As he became older, his legs became unsteady, and therefore he had to use a walking cane. Rami Yudah Merav, Shachzo, Podgara. Or podagra, that he got some sort of foot ailment, and that's why he needed this help with walking. That the podagra, I don't know exactly what disease it is, but the Rashi says it's even a disease in our lashon. I'm sure that the shoresh, or the word of pod or podiatry, meaning pod is the Latin term for foot, so I'm sure it has something to do with pod. I don't know what the gara part is, but whatever it is, it's painful. What's this case? What does it feel like? What is this podagra? Samarav shachzo. It's like putting a needle into live skin, meaning that person is sticking a needle into someone who is alive. That is a pain. Here, the Gemara in Brachot discusses that with regards to whether the Meitim feel. Do the people who are dead still feel? So the Gemara uses this example, it's like placing a pin into someone who is alive, which is a very painful thing. So same thing over here. When it comes to this disease, this podagra, or this problem of that causes one to be able to walk, it's like as painful as putting a needle into live skin. How did Rav Nachman know that was the case? How did he know how painful it was? Some say that he actually had the disease, or he had felt at some point had the disease, and therefore he knew what it was. Some say that he learned it from his rabbi. His rabbi had a masora that's how the way it feels. That also over here, that by Zema, some say that Sod Hashem L'Reyav, it's given over to his Hashem gives to those that fear him, his secrets. So Hashem gave him the understanding to know what it is, even though he never experienced it. Right, so Bidolo Odiyam. So that's, again, we have this in Gemara in other places, like in Sota, with Ben Zoma would never get married, and then he says something about marriage, the Gemara says, how does he know? So the Gemara says, either, Ibai Seima, Rabbi Akiva Rabbe, he learned it from his Rabbi Akiva's Rabbi, or, Ibai Seima, Soda Shem, Lereyav, Bidolo Odiyam. Same idea here, that Hashem gives away his secrets, gives away this knowledge to those that are close to him, and those that Nova Becherev, that he will fall by the sword. So this is next to the part of the curse. That's from Yoshiyahu, Dechtiv, Bayoru, right, Hayorim, they were shooting at the arrows, the archers were shooting at him, the Melech Yoshiyahu, and he was then punctured. There were so many arrows that hit him, they made him like a sieve, because they had hit him, or they had struck him so many times with the arrows. So here was someone who was killed in battle. That he'll be poor, or he won't have the, won't live like a king, is from Yechoniah, who was put into Galut by Nebuchadnezzar. When he's put into Galut, he said, Dichtiv, Aruchato, Aruchat Tamid, Nitnat Nolo. He got a specific designated meal, he got a small piece of food that was given to him in prison, and that's all he got. So therefore, he lived in poverty, he lived in that, not in the feeling of being a king with wealth and opulence. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Hainu Damar Inche, this is what people say, Tehe Lo Tav, Lo Tehe La'ato. Make sure that you're the one being cursed, and not the one that curses. Why? Because, as Rashi points out, the fish is sof kilat chinam l'shuv el mekalal. Anytime a stam klala goes out, in the end it's going to come back on the person who gave it. So better not to be the giver of the curse, because in the end that will come back to haunt you or hurt you. Better to be the one that receives the curse, because that won't necessarily come true, won't necessarily happen, and it might actually go back to the one who cursed. Like we see over here, that even though David HaMelech cursed Yoav, in the end, all of these items ended up having to his family. You can imagine it's almost like a Zev Zed Gorem. The fact that David cursed Yoav is what caused the problem for him later on, because then it turned back on him. But it seems from the story that it was because Shlomo made a decision to kill Yoav, and he thereby accepted on himself the curse. So it's because of what Shlomo did that created the curse to go on him. So it's a little bit probably like a Zev Zed Gorem type of case, where both the fact that David cursed Yoav inappropriately, and then Shlomo is the one who accepted the curse on himself, and in the end it turns out or turns around on him, because Shlomo seems to wants to ignore the curse, because he said, my father cursed Yoav, but in the end, because of Yoav's statement, it came back onto Malchus Beit David. Okay, we'll stop over here.